The Articulate Coven is the original, unofficial podcast and fan community for Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire and Anne Rice's Immortal Universe from AMC and AMC+.
Welcome to The Articulate Coven. We are your hosts. I'm Joel.
I'm Ashley.
And we are The Articulate Coven. Ashley, thank you for... we've done a lot of podcasting in a short amount of time.
Technically,
we haven't remained weekly. So we've both screwed up and been very good boys and girls.
Yes, we have both been scum and awesome simultaneously and then on alternating days. Thank you guys for being cool and patient with us. We appreciate you. Because life happens and we really give each other a lot of grace since we've known each other since we were like 20.
Yes. But also we know the stretch that's ahead of us. We're going to be very focused, obviously, on season two, trying to get those episodes out as quickly as possible for you. So while we were doing these catch-up episodes
in between, now we know we have to stay up we have to stay up past your bedtime now, Joel.
Okay, so that leads us to our first question. What I wanted to do tonight was just a little Q&A, a handful of things that we've gotten on our Facebook page, on the YouTube channel, and respond to those. And that would lead us to a little bit of discussion and speculation about season two, which is imminent at this point.
Let's get
into it. Jessica Rose asked under the post I shared, or somebody had shared the post earlier today. I shared it because I made the joke about bedtime. AMC's Immortal Universe had posted the, this is what we've been hearing, but I was just certain we were going to hear different. It seems as if they are implying that both AMC and AMC Plus, those new episodes will drop at 9 p.m. was the time that they had quoted. Jessica Rose comments and says, I'm trying to work out what time that is in my part of the world. Which of the three U.S. time zones do they mean? The broader question, when does IWTV season two air? So it launches on May 12th. And apparently, based on what we've seen from last season and otherwise, the show previously aired at 10 o'clock Eastern. And I had heard that they had moved it back an hour into the more primetime slot, so to speak.
That's
9 o'clock Eastern. Right. So it'll be 8 Central our time and then 7 o'clock on Mountain Time and 6 p.m. East Coast or West Coast time. So that's your range there, folks.
It doesn't seem like it's dropping early.
No, not even early during the day.
For us on AMC Plus, not even like midnight, not even, God, I love a midnight drop. I will be a little like zombie at work the next day to get to enjoy a midnight drop sometimes. I can't help myself.
Well, okay. I understand, first of all, not wanting to give the AMC Plus viewers the show early because of spoilers and online discussion and everything. And that's fine. I understand that. 9 p.m. is too late for these things, though, man. Even Disney Plus has taken to what they do is they drop it at like 9 p.m. West Coast time, midnight East Coast, the night before technically it's available. So like if you really want to stay up and wait, I think at 9 or 10 o'clock every night on Tuesdays, you could watch the new X-Men episode, for instance.
Oh, it's so good. Have you been watching that?
I have. Absolutely. It is.
Oh, God, it's so good.
And it's worth mentioning here, too, just because it is another example of excellent LGBTQ plus representation without making that like it's
commentary,
not a mission
about it. It's
right.
Just
it's not yet. Yeah, it's just people existing.
Yeah,
yes,
I love
absolutely.
It.
Like in the latest episode, Morph is referenced with the non-binary they. And it's just so casual. And you're like, yeah, man, that's the way that it's supposed. Anyway, that show is outstanding. If you are at all an X-Men fan, or even if you just have in the past liked comics, absolutely, you should check that out.
Not to immediately get us off track, but watched the newest episode tonight, so it's fresh on my mind.
Well, the reason I mentioned it at all is because that has become my Wednesday morning habit, right? Like, I basically set up my schedule so that I don't have to start work until, 9 or 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning on Wednesdays, because I know the first thing I'm going to do is get up and watch X-Men. And I'm imagining my Monday mornings will be very similar to that now too, right? We'll watch it for the first time, Kelly and I together, Sunday night, and then Monday morning, I'll do my deep dive for notes with, you know, watching the rewatching the episodes before our discussions here on the show. So to answer the question there, I'm guessing that we're going to be recording probably Monday evenings after
Monday evenings.
Are off
Yeah. I'm hoping, because ideally I can get a second viewing in after I get home from work, which is around five, or depending on the amount of titty in the episode, I might be able to do a rewatch in the background while I'm checking code. So we'll have to see, you know. But it does depend on the amount of, you know, titty and ass we're getting into, which, you know, we enjoy it. We're not complaining.
No, not at all. Ashley Hamilton said on our Facebook group, if we're going to get the trial this season, which by the previews we are, then we have to get the scene where Armand and Louis split. Louis was cold. And she's got a great quote here from the novels. But you were a destroyer, just as I was a destroyer, more ruthless and cunning even than I. You showed me the only thing I could really hope to become, what depth of evil, what degree of coldness I would have to attain to end my pain. And I accepted that. And so that passion, that love you saw in me, was extinguished. And you see now simply a mirror of yourself. Oof. Yeah, Louis can cut. He can cut the novels just as well as he can in the show.
Yeah.
Ashley says there are always glimpses of how truly cold and cruel Louis can be. We haven't really seen it yet in the show. They cannot do his character justice if they don't show it.
Yeah. I mean, it is definitely a side of him, but that's sort of the thing too, in like, you know, it's a special skill I think some people have. I actually have it a bit and I hate it. I really try not to use it, but pretty much I can tell exactly the thing I could say to make someone feel the worst way possible if I wanted to. You know what I mean? Like, I just really can kind of hone in on that
sort
of
thing.
Send them to therapy. Yeah, it's really bad, and I hate it. I hate it. I really try never to do it, because it is a lethal kind of poisonous tongue that I can have sometimes. And I think Louis can have that. And I think that's one of the few times you see kind of his, like, any sort of like fight in him left, you know. And it is that trying to grasp onto that last little shred of humanity. Like, he's like, I see what I would be and what I've become, and it sucks and I hate it and you suck. And so, blech.
So I told Ashley in the Facebook post that I was going to comment on this more fully in the Q&A episode. I don't think that farewell between Armand and Louis comes this season. I do think that we're going to get Lestat in the modern day at the end of this season. And we'll talk about some speculation for what we think the finale might look like a little bit later on. But I think the Armand and Louis split will be a major plot point for season 3. And I think that we might get some version of a modern day set Devil's Minion to some degree, alongside Armand trying to court back Louis and perhaps Lestat wooing him again in the modern day.
Yeah, kind of leading into a Queen of the Damned type storyline.
Yes. Yes, yeah. I think Queen of the Damned is coming, and I think the love triangle of those three, Armand, Louis, and Lestat, is going to play heavily into how that story resolves. You know, we joked about it, Ashley, on our commentary track episode where we discussed Queen of the Damned, the film adaptation. You know, Louis's not in that at all. He's not in that universe.
He's not. He's not there. He just doesn't exist.
But Louis in the story, in the novel of Queen of the Damned, is also fairly sidetracked. Like, he is present, and there's some reunion scenes with Lestat that are good. But as far as, like, moving the plot of the story, our, you know, Eeyore of vampires is not really central to the conflict between the ancient vampires, you know.
He kind of swings in to sort of save Lestat's ass at the end, which is great. It kind of, like, I love that kind of feel to him, you know, showing up in a car, saving his ass. I love that.
Well, so I mean, yes, you're right. I'd forgotten about that scene. You're right. He does actually, there is an action sequence with Louis, which is nice.
I love it.
But effectively, the way that he's used in that novel is almost like, you know, there's the great scene in Godfather Part 2 where the underling from Michael Corleone has gone state's evidence, and then Michael flies in his brother from Italy, and he doesn't even speak. He just like shows up in the courtroom, and the brother's like, "I don't remember nothing. I made it all up. Michael Corleone's a good guy, you know.
He's my best friend. He does nothing but but good things."
Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's like I feel like they sort of use Louis in that way. They bring him around as like a pawn, like, no, Lestat, remember, there's things that you like, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is a way to control him. And like, you know, and if you need to keep someone in check, knowing what they're, you know, how you can leverage them is very important.
Well, and I wonder if, again, like with the great performance that you're getting from Jacob Anderson and the more nuance that he's brought to the character of Louis, they might center him more in the narrative itself, I would imagine, for the Queen of the Damned storyline. So,
oh, I think it would be a real shame to have him just disappear for a season. We'd be like, what the fuck?
What if Louis is the one that Akasha is pursuing? I mean, I'm not saying that Rollins going to do that.
That would be a very big change.
It would be a very big change, right? But it would be interesting to see how he could have a larger role in the story. So, but my point in that is, I think the Armand Louis stuff will go all season long, and they may have riffs as Louis seems to uncover some memories in some of the trailers. And so as he more fully understands exactly what happened, they may have some bumps and bruises in the road, so to speak, but I don't think there's going to be an actual dissolution of that relationship until season three. So we'll wait and see.
I'm a little surprised with this, with like, if anyone's paying any sort of attention, AMC is like, especially on your social media, on anything digital, is like pushing this so hard right now. They are going balls deep on Interview the Vampire currently. I'm a little surprised, especially because the reviews have been coming back really great, seems like, that we haven't gotten a season three renewal notice yet. I mean, I know it hasn't come out yet, and that's early, but still, like, they got that Mayfair second season announcement real quick, and that was a pile of shit.
Sorry, you choked me. That
I'm so sorry.
No, you could not be more accurate. Absolutely, Ashley. I mean, and honestly, like, I understand why you wouldn't abandon it, but the only thing that I can think of anytime I think about season two of Mayfair Witches is just like throwing good money after bad. Like, what are you doing?
We have to watch
just shit can that and start over again with the Talamasca in the Vampire Chronicles. Like, everybody knows about Multiverse. That was a different universe. Don't even worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. We can, you know, Spider-Man our way right out of that shit into something else. It's fine.
Man. Okay, so Nicholas Danielson, this was a couple weeks ago, actually, but he tagged the two of us in a post on the Facebook group, said, "Spoilers for the books. Been loving your latest episodes, and I'm listening to your commentary track on the IWTV movie. However, there's a nitpick I need to, well, I don't need to bring it to your attention, but I'm gonna. In a few episodes, you have said that it is revealed in later books that Lestat came to Paris and the theater around the time Louis and Claudia were there and had a confrontation with Armand, got thrown out of a tower. However, in Interview with the Vampire, the book, not the movie, Lestat is actually there at the trial scene. He's in the book. This is in the original book. I had forgotten this.
Right.
Lestat is still injured. His face is covered in scars from Claudia's attack, and he is furious, feebly begging Santiago to leave Louis alive, that he only promised them Claudia. It's then revealed in the Vampire Lestat novel that he also managed to have a chat with Armand, demanded healing blood, and got thrown out of a tower for his trouble. So, just a bit of a nerdy nitpick here.
No, it's so very this, good, and we
this
love
ties
it.
Ties into... Well, and it reinforces what we've imagined, which is that some of the violence that we saw in season one is actually going to be revealed to be combinations, smudging of memories of violence that takes place in season two.
Yeah. It's probably there's definitely that fight in season one that happens. I think you're,
because we're going to revisit it.
Yeah, I think but it's definitely going to be an amalgamation. I think you're totally right about that. That it's going to be kind of like a like they've they've like crossed paths in the ether, these memories.
Yeah, and the thing to me is like, who did the meddling? Like in some of the trailers, it really seems like Louis requested or wanted this.
Well, and it's interesting too to think about, like, we're assuming a lot of nefarious intent, which I mean obviously is real, let's be honest, but like if I'm playing devil's advocate, I can say, you know, memory, like we've talked about before, memory is ever changing, and every time you think back to something, you remember it a little bit differently than it actually happened. So over time it changes and changes and changes, and we're looking at creatures, characters, beings that have been alive for, you know, 500 years, some of them.
You're absolutely right.
So their memories are going to be polluted in you know, like, I mean, I think about, yeah, like our memories get totally like a wash over them as you go along.
Well, and here's the other. Okay, so I'm listening currently to a book by Willie Nelson. It's called Energy Follows Thought. It's fairly new. I think it just came out last year. But what it is it's a collection of like 160 of his songs
with the
lyrics written out. But then in between, he gives you like little essays, mini essays on like what this album was about or why he wrote this song or what this metaphor means or whatever. Yeah, it's pretty cool. The audiobook version, by the way, is narrated by Ethan Hawke. So you get to hear all of this in Ethan Hawke's voice. It's pretty damn good. But a song came up, which I knew and had heard before, but hearing it in you know, spoken word fashion as opposed to with music really brought out the meaning of it. There's a Willie Nelson song called If You Can't Undo the Wrong, Undo the Right. And the story of the song very much mimics like the idea of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, you know?
Right.
The idea of like a breakup so bad or a heartbreak so terrible that you would remove the good times too. You'd erase the whole thing from your memory. Yeah. And I wonder, listening to this, it immediately hit me the way that these trailers are playing out. I'm like, what if Louis asked for this? What if Louis decided that he's responsible? We've speculated in the past, like, what if Lestat's in the theater when Louis has his finale at the end of this book? You know, what if he blames himself in a big bad way for whatever happened to Lestat? And because of that, literally had Armand do a Men in Black mind wipe.
Or what happens to Claudia? You know, what happens to Claudia?
Yes.
I think that's like fucking traumatic. That's awful. Like, spoiler alert. But yeah, what happens to Claudia is fucked up and awful. And so, like, and it's even more awful than you know at first. Like, it gets worse and worse when you learn more about it. Like, it just continues to be awful and traumatic and horrible. You think about someone you love like a sibling, someone who is a sibling to you. That's, I mean, you and I both have siblings that we absolutely fucking adore and all of that. And to the idea of that is horrifying to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when you think that you're, whether wrong or right, you're responsible for it.
Right,
you
know, right, absolutely.
Which I feel like is where we're going to get at the end of this.
100%, yeah.
That's one of the reasons why I don't think there'll be a split with Armand right away, because I really think this is going to be about self-loathing and self-realization.
Well, and blaming Lestat.
And there's like, really going to be some, well, maybe a little bit.
If we get that trial scene the way that we think we are, then I think Louis is going to come out of that 100% blaming Lestat for everything that happens. I think that he will not see Armand's part in it. The only thing he'll feel is there may be more you could have done. You know what I mean? Like, but I feel like we're going to come out of that. Armand's going to come out of that like smelling like a fucking rose. And it's going to be like, it's Lestat's fault that all of this happened. Just the way it kind of like, that's how it comes across in the book too. Like that's like, Louis doesn't blame Armand for that, you know, for a long while.
And then Lestat kicks the penthouse doors in and goes, did you know he Frankensteined her?
He Frankensteined the hell out of her. Jesus Christ, it's just the worst.
Oh, man. Okay, God. So David Brown says, Joel Sharpton, while IWTV was on a break, I binge-watched Hannibal. Yeah, man, that was a dark show.
So good.
But I powered through to see the similarities of IWTV. There were subtle similarities throughout, but I had to wait until the last episode. IWTV goes down much smoother. Lol. Boy, AMC has come a long way since 2019. And so he was watching this on AMC, which made me realize, by the way, and I went and looked, it's in the AMC Plus app right now, the whole series. If you haven't watched the NBC series Hannibal, it's great. But as I told David Brown there in the group, that show did originally air on NBC. And every time I think about it, Ashley, I'm flabbergasted again. It came on very late. It was like a 10 o'clock.
Yeah, but it's still fucking bananas. That was on like a network. It's
just absurd.
You know, it's like, looking back,
never mind the gore.
Right. But like all of it, it's like this, it was so psychosexual and like intense.
So psychosexual.
Like that's not like, yeah, that's a show that makes that like, would make a network very uncomfortable. You know, this
I mean,
not.
I don't think it would be on NBC today. If they rebooted it or restarted, you know, there've been rumors that they were going to clear up the rights to the reason why that show ended, honestly, if you don't know, basically the rights of the character Hannibal and the books where he is really the lead are owned by one group, Universal, and the rights to Silence of the Lambs specifically are owned by another group. It's why there was a show, I think it was on CBS a few years ago, that was called Clarice, and it's just a Clarice Starling FBI show. But they don't have the rights to Hannibal. They don't have the rights to
the characters,
the Mason Verger character. They don't have the rights to a bunch of that. But it's just the storyline for Silence of the Lambs.
It's
the
like
rumors
a,
were
it's
that,
like
that was
Spider-Man
all consolidated
bullshit.
And dealt with. Yeah, very similar to that.
You know, it's like the Spider-Man bullshit. Like, okay, like, give us the multiverse and let's get on with our lives. Like, I don't care about your fucking studio contracts. Tell me a good story. Tell me these stories. Like, it just gets tiresome as a fan who wants to enjoy really good shit to watch, especially like intense things. And it always gets mucked up by like nonsense contracts and stuff.
It's interesting to me though, because that series, the main two characters, Will Graham and Hannibal Lecter, obviously Will Graham's the detective character from Red Dragon in the novels. He's the first one that interacts with Hannibal before the story of Silence of the Lambs, honestly. But in that series,
great casting as well. Like, holy
unbelievable. Like, Lawrence Fishburne plays the boss, and he's great too. Just amazing in it. The whole top to bottom. What's her name from X-Files? Is it Gillian Anderson?
Oh, yeah, Gillian Anderson.
Run.
Fuck yeah.
She's amazing in that show. As a matter of fact, I'm going to end up rewatching Hannibal now. So thank you for
I think
that,
I
David.
Might too. Yeah, like, I think
it's
I
just
was,
so
like,
good.
I've been thinking about that ever since that post. I've been like, oh, you know, I need like just a background thing, you know?
But here's the interesting thing to me though, when you parallel the two shows, because this is not really there in the books. It's there in the books like in a minor way. That series though was very much built on the idea that Hannibal and Will are like dark mirrors of each other.
Right.
And there is this psychosexual attraction between the two of them. And the actors portray that in a way that is palpable from episode one,
100%.
But there's not even any kissing until literally the end of the series, and then it's sort of made more overt, right? But like my point in bringing that up and discussing this further is that's an example of basically the way that the books played the relationship between Louis and Lestat. It's all heightened, you know, drama of the romance and the sexual attraction.
It's
no
that tension. Yeah,
right.
That like the like the moment right before it happens being more important than the moment that it happens.
Yeah, yeah. And whereas the series is making that sexual subtext text, you know, they're putting it on Front Street, so to speak. But
and
it is interesting to me. Well, absolutely, we love it. But it's interesting to me that you can play it the other way, and it's still very effective. Like, no one can watch that series and doubt that there's, like, the series is about the sexual tension between those two characters, even though they never get naked, you know?
Absolutely. So. Yeah, absolutely. It's just, it's so wonderful that if you just shift your focus and your view and your gaze a little bit, you can tell really complex, interesting stories in from so many different perspectives in so many different ways. Like, we do not have to be stuck in our, like, the fucking heteronormative, like, outlook on everything. And it's so awesome that we're seeing more shows, we're seeing more movies, we're seeing more of representation happening that is just being represented, not it, like we talked about, like it not being a thing, it's just there and it's well done. And it's, I love it. It's like, it's a great time. It's a great time for film and television, I think, and diversity. I think that we're in a really cool time for a lot of interesting love and lust stories to be told from a lot of different perspectives, if that's your jam.
Yes, absolutely. But can I just also say, I'm glad to have sex back in movies and TV. Like, yeah! It felt like when we were growing up, there was this entire, like, you could have a filthy, very straight-laced drama that would also have, you know, pretty raw sex scenes in it. But then you would also have an entire genre that's like just about psychosexual thrillers, you know, like the Basic Instincts and the Fatal Attractions of the world, right?
Well, and that always has to involve like intense, like violence, murder, and like different types of, you know, like there's more to it than that. And that I don't think has ever been done as well, like a consensual, non-violent kind of representation of a psychosexual situation. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that's quite, we haven't quite gotten there yet, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, Last Tango in Paris is probably as close as you get. And that's a pretty fucked up movie by modern standards, especially.
Right, right. But like, no, you're totally right. The sex, well, I was watching, and this is kind of, I guess it came out in the last like probably 5 or so years, The Looming Tower, which was a Hulu series about the lead up to 9/11 with the FBI and the CIA.
Yeah.
And it's such a great series. If you haven't watched it, I highly recommend it. The book's awesome too. But there is a lot of just like fucking in that, like just fucking for fucking, and like you see like the characters fucking to like get off and get out of their stress and shit like that. You see like people using sex as like the way people use and need and want sex, and it was very interesting to watch because it was like this like this very serious like terrorist drama, there's still like these like pretty like not gratuitous, but like very
right,
like sex scenes, like full on.
What are they?
They were being shy.
It's not bedroom closed door romance. It wasn't
No closed door romance at all. There's like, yeah. So it's, I was like, this is very interesting to me that they've incorporated this in part to show how this like intimacy being a coping mechanism, and that's a big part of like our vampires and these characters. Intimacy is something we lean into when we feel very lost or unanchored or out floating in the nothingness, and I think that's something really cool that we get to like watch and see again, because it sort of normalizes it in your head if that's like something you feel and want and seek.
It is interesting that we went through like basically 2 decades where mainstream movies just didn't have sex in them at all, you know.
Yeah,
like think about like not even think about the Marvel movies, how little romance there is in them.
So little, like, but I mean, like not even very little women too.
Well, I mean, that's true too. Well, okay, but like you've got Scarlett Johansson in 12 or 15 of those things, and she flirts with everybody. Well, but I mean, she's got.
Oh, I feel like she flirts with everybody.
Well, so it's a little bit, but like there's real interaction.
But she's not macking
Captain America.
Yeah. She's macking.
And then there's
Bruce Banner.
Ruffalo.
Yeah. Which feels
but even
really
that,
lovely.
Like, it does feel lovely, but it also feels like a small glass of water in the middle of the desert, you know.
Yes,
and
that's very true.
Right now, you've got Challengers that's in movie theaters, which is effectively a whole movie about a threesome, you know, and like Zendaya, the biggest movie star in the world
threesome.
Right now, is in the middle of it. Yeah.
And she's gorgeous, and we love her.
Anyway, I'm here for it.
We are, you know, like, keep things interesting. That's, we want interest. We're interested.
We are interested. All right. Speaking of interest, I'm interested in you subscribing to our YouTube channel. Find us on YouTube, Articulate Coven. And even if you don't watch the videos there, if you listen to the show normally in a podcast app, subscribe to the channel. It helps our it helps us be found by other people. For instance, M. Lawrence 1941 commented, "At the risk of being super late in commenting, I must confess that I found it kind of shocking that someone could dislike Claudia in any way, shape, or form."
Joel.
I mean, she's talking to me, obviously, yeah. I mean, she is one of my favorite characters, so I'm biased, and I absolutely adore Bailey's portrayal. I am not a native English speaker, so my accent is likely worse than anything she could possibly do. But even disregarding that, her actions seem to me perfectly justifiable. She loves someone dearly who is being hampered by a toxic relationship, and she is being affected by the other person in that relationship as well. She is a person of action. Of course she will act. And she will be mean and spiteful because mean and spiteful is all Lestat deserves at that point. Not to mention, she has her own demons to recon with. I see my younger self in her so much, and I sympathize with her so dearly. I just really had to come to the comments and speak in her defense. However, I should say, even after reading all but the last three books in the Chronicles, I cannot stomach Lestat. Therefore, all my favorite characters are naturally those who poison him, throttle him, try to burn him, or throw him off high buildings. So there's that. Love your podcast.
Oh my God, it's a rare Lestat hater. Joel, we were just talking about this.
Yes, literally on the Facebook group tonight. I was so flabbergasted when the show started coming out last season. And the reaction on Twitter was young people who had never read the novels or heard this story before, never seen the movies even. And they watched the first couple of episodes and they're like, wait a minute, you're telling me all the other books are about this other asshole? And I'm like, what? Excuse me now?
Que? Quoi?
My baby boy?
Yes, you know, baby boy is his, like, he's baby boy in the Facebook group almost exclusively now, I feel like.
Well, you got baby boy and you've got murder gremlin and
murder goblin.
Murder goblin, that's right. Here's what I love, though. First of all, I love that we must be doing a good enough job covering all angles that even for somebody who hates Lestat and who loves Claudia specifically, they're also enjoying our show. So I appreciate that, and I'm glad that we're doing that for you. But I also love how vast these books are and how big this world is. You know, yeah, Lestat writes a lot of them, and they're his stories, quote-unquote, but there is a broad cast of characters for this series especially to draw from. And I think just like The Walking Dead, you know, that's a good example. There are a lot of great characters in The Walking Dead comic, but I think the TV show did a better job generally of expanding and expounding on those characters in a way that everybody has something to come watch this, right? You know, maybe you're a Carl fan, maybe you're
especially those first few seasons, man. The first few seasons of that's just a really good example of, again, a good, like, you're a good starter material that you love, an IP that you're super psyched about, but that you're also willing to see changes made to. Now, I get it. Sometimes it's a bridge too far. And there have been a couple of times that people had to dive out of Walking Dead. And eventually I kind of have gotten a little, like, less interested. And I sort of petered out a few seasons ago. You know, I have to admit, I need to go back and finish it. But, like, it is a great example of how you can grow and expand an IP. Like, my God, they're like all the new series that are coming out all the time. Like, that's my hope for this world.
Yes. Well, and I think one way that Anne's books improve on that universe as subject matter is that Anne's have centuries and centuries and centuries and said hundreds of centuries, millennia, in fact, of storyline that have already sort of been lined out, and you can have the broad strokes to build a spinoff of. So I'm very much hopeful that we get some period stuff down the road from the Immortal Universe regardless. Okay, here's one from Christine G. 1752. She says, I'm reading The Prince Lestat, and he mentions The Coven of the Articulate. Did you guys consciously or unconsciously name the podcast after this? P.S. So loving the podcast. You guys are so cool.
I watched season one of
IWTV four times. Happy to find others who are just as obsessed as me. So I could be wrong on this.
Joel, she has no idea that we're not cool at all.
You're right. We're theater kids. We are so not cool.
We're such nerds.
Man, I heard someone hilarious talking the other day about the fact that theater kids is a way for non-cool people to get to experience all the things that cool people do. And
it's he talks about
like the relationship drama and the incredibly hectic social calendar and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, he really made a good argument for it. Okay, so I could be wrong on this. Maybe The Prince Lestat is the first time that that specific phrase, turn of phrase, is mentioned.
No, because I've heard it and I haven't read Prince Lestat yet.
The final trilogy, right. So, okay.
Yeah, yeah. You know I'm behind. So I know of The Coven of the Articulate, yes. Like, that's mentioned. It's got to be in, maybe in Tale of the Body Thief or the end of Queen of the Damned. Like, it's definitely, that area of time.
It's when, it's either, it's, I believe it's, the first time it's used is in reference to the Night Island. And I think it's either at the very end of Queen of the Damned in the wrap up or in the prologue, basically, of Tale of the Body Thief.
Right.
At one point, Lestat references the group that lives at Night Island as the Coven of the Articulate.
Right.
And I mean, of course, the reference there is that several of them have written novels about themselves, you know, or memoirs or whatever.
Right. Absolutely.
And that they, you know, they opine about immortality and, you know, their place in the universe or whatever.
And then the irony is that sometimes we are completely inarticulate in our thoughts. So you get all of what you want here.
Listen, Ashley, you got to read the 10 again. I say the coven as a whole is articulate, not any individual member. I don't make that claim. Collectively, we're articulate.
Collectively, yes, yes. Thank God for all of you listening. You make us better.
Okay, you, me, RU6WI commented on the YouTube channel, and I think this is going to be our last one. Another amazing podcast. You both are fantastic. Always a joy to listen to. By the way, I just found comments that were really polite to us like that. So do you think maybe towards the end of season two, we could see Lestat making some grand entrance in modern day Dubai? Like he comes bursting through a window, surprising Louis Armand and poor Daniel being caught in the middle. Oh my God. I'm so excited. Season two is almost here. Also, it's really wonderful to see that this official trailer has gotten. So in, this is reference to the Rollin Jones trailer.
Oh my God.
Which, by the way, I love, we didn't mention this, but Rollin Jones referenced that and said that it shouldn't be called the Jones trailer. It is really the
production.
London cut.
Yeah, the London cut. Yeah, they're, because it's the whole team. Like he's like
a lot of people worked on it.
This is what we want. This is what we want you to know is about to happen. I love that. He's such a fucking man. He's a great. He feels like a great boss. If I find out that he's been like a creep backstage, I'm gonna be so pissed off.
Right. Okay. Since we mentioned it earlier, and we are around for a little bit of drama. See this. Okay. The X-Men 97 showrunner is Bo DiMaio, and he got shit canned the week before the show launched. Now, Disney has not exactly come out and said what the creative differences, I think, is all that was ever quoted.
Well, that's what Disney says. That's Disney's thing.
Well, sure, right? Bo hasn't said anything about it either. There was some speculation when it first happened because he had, I don't know if he still does, he previously had an OnlyFans account. He's very, very buff, and he's a very good-looking gay black man.
Make your money, buddy. Make your money.
Right, right, exactly. But it has since come out, and several of his previous colleagues have made comments. He apparently got shit canned from The Witcher a few years ago because he is very hard to work with. He's just a very difficult guy. So like it seems like there may have been some, I mean, maybe even borderline abusive behavior. Not like sexually, but
yeah,
just like,
but just a dick. Just being a dick
to
work
with. Too dictatorial and hard to work with. Yeah. So anyway, I'm sort of on tender hooks. Part of me is like, that show's so good, I want to fight for the creator. On the flip side, I mean, if he's not a great person to work with, then it's good that they have created a, you know, more sound working environment.
Right.
Anyway.
Everybody deserves that. Everybody that works on a show deserves a good, safe, functional environment to work in. It can be hard, and it can be stressful, and it can be shitty some days. But as anybody in their life deserves a job where you are respected and you are safe and you can get through the day without wanting to, you know, whatever.
Harm yourself or others. Absolutely.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for finishing
that's what it comes down
sentence.
To.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. Like if.
So anyway, I'm glad that we've never heard anything.
I know.
You
know,
negative like that about Rollin. And I'm
hopeful
that. I'd
be so disappointed.
It's true. He, everybody.
May he be a Mike Flanagan. May he be a Mike Flanagan. May he be a, who's our guy? Who's the brilliant X-Files and Breaking Bad that everybody loves to work for?
Oh, God. What is his name?
Vince Gilligan.
I can't think of his name. Vince Gilligan. Yes, Vince Gilligan.
May our creators be these types?
Well, I mean, it's just like you just said. Like, this is a small business. It's a small industry. And you cannot be an asshole and continually get away with it, honestly. Like, people talk, and nobody wants to work with dickheads. And especially in this day and age, it doesn't matter how talented you are, honestly. If you're going to be a dick, people are going to talk about it, and then they're going to cut you off. So I say good to that.
I do, too. It's a great change that, like, the power dynamic is starting to shift a bit, and that it's not tolerated. It's not acceptable. And that's really, like, it's always been acceptable. I mean, Joel, you and I both worked in theater. we know what we've seen and what we've experienced, no doubt, you know, like, you know, it's weird and it's fucked up and it's strange and it's, and you're supposed to just be happy that you got a job because it's such a competitive field. And that's,
well, and that's the thing. There's
abusers
40 people.
Fucking. Yeah. There's someone right there. There's 40 people waiting to take your job. That's what you're told. That's what you're told.
That want it worse than you. Clearly.
Yeah, because they will endure whatever you're not willing to endure, which is so fucked up. So, like, the whole environment from Jump Street is, like, ugh, toxic and awful. So anytime you hear about, like, a really good experience and you hear about studios and producers and directors that are doing good work, you know, like the Mike Schur is another one who creates a really good environment, it seems like, that did The Good Place and you know, like, that's what you want to hear about. Like, that's what we want.
The guy that does White Lotus. You hear the same thing about the
White
Lotus.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So they're like if there's anything horrible happening on a set of a show I love, I want to know about it. I want it dealt with. I want that person fired, and I want them to be replaced with the person that was waiting behind me to deal with whatever I dealt with. You know what I mean? Like, I'm ready for that to happen for people. Ugh. Not to get off on a tirade, guys, but the industry is really tiring and unfortunate, and it's not safe for a lot of people. And when we're talking about a show that potentially could involve a very young actor, like we're talking about Kirsten Dunst when she was 12, you know, like, you want to know that we're putting people with directors, with producers, with whatever, production managers, that are going to make sure that everybody is safe and feels good about what they're doing.
100%. All right.
Ooh, that was
Ashley,
a tirade.
Let's turn it back to the show and wrap it up with this to answer that question. How do you think this second season is going to end? I do think it's going to end in the modern day, just like we had at the end of season one with the reveal of Rashid. I think we're going to get a big character reveal. I don't think it's going to be a new person. I think it's going to be Lestat in the modern day. Now, whether or not he literally kicks in the doors of the penthouse, or whether we just see him in the modern day somewhere else on his way to our pair, et cetera, et cetera. I think the finale will be where you finally realize, yes, he's around, he's doing something, all of these characters are coming together at a, you know, inflection point in their history. Where will Daniel be left at the end of season two? You know, that's another big question right. for me. We know what happens to Daniel in the books. What happens to Daniel in this universe?
Right. And how quickly, I mean, how quickly are we going into the next thing is another question for me. Like, is it going to become like immediately urgent? Are we immediately going to be segueing into the events of Queen of the Damned? I also am not 100% sure we don't get a glimpse of Akasha and Inkle at the end of this season or towards the end of the season. I think
that,
we're going to get
that could absolutely that be reveal. The other one.
Yeah, that's kind of my feeling for the end of the season. I don't necessarily, like, I think we could get Lestat, but I think we're also going to get that at the end of the season. I think that this is going to lead everything up to Queen of the Damned, and then we're going to hit Queen of the Damned next season, and then that's going to involve flashbacks to the vampire Lestat. And so that's how we're going to get all of Lestat's backstory and his side of the story. It's going to be like literally just how it is in the books, I think.
Man, I have not thought about this before, but I just had the thought. Okay, so at the end of the 94 IWTV movie, Louis and Daniel have a fight as Daniel mm-hmm. demands the blood, and Louis yes. bites him and then runs away. Daniel collects his shit, gets into the car, and excitedly heads to New Orleans to try to find Lestat. Unbeknownst to him, Lestat's in the back seat, comes up, bites him.
In the back seat of your car!
And tells him he's going to make him a vampire, right? Okay, what if Lestat kidnaps Daniel from the penthouse tower?
From like, the threesome? Like the,
you know... like Tangled, like Rapunzel, gets him out of the tower. And what if Lestat is the one that turns Daniel? And then we have Daniel and Lestat gallivanting around the globe, trying to stay away from Armand and Louis chasing them, while Lestat regales Daniel with his own story to begin season three. That might be a way it goes. I think
that's an awesome idea, and I would be 100% about that way of telling it. And how much does it say about this fucking production team that we are willing and excited about the possibility of things being way fucking different than they are on the page? I love that we're so open to that.
I mean, they've proven themselves a race swap with Louis. They moved it up, you know, 50, 60, 70 years, something like that.
And it's done nothing but serve the story. It's done nothing but serve the story.
So I'm here for it, and I'm here for the ride. I have not read the reviews, largely. I've seen the headlines.
I'm trying to avoid spoilers. Like, I think you and I are in the same boat, I think, trying to avoid spoilers. Like, I don't want to see anything.
Well, I mean, my thought is this. Like, I know enough about what's coming from the books
right.
to do the general thing that I like when I read spoilers in other material, right? Like some about a Marvel movie, sometimes I'll read like a plot breakdown because I'm like, oh, what stories are they telling?
Oh yeah,
right?
Absolutely. And I can get an idea of
where they're headed.
Yeah.
Right. And I would feel similarly with this, except that I know these stories so intimately. If you tell me basically what you're doing, I like, why do I even need to watch it? I'll probably just perform it for you.
I feel like also like, part of like what we kind of owe to each other at this point and to the people that are listening to us is to be able to give like a genuine reaction to what we're seeing and experiencing.
Yes, absolutely. Especially when there are changes from the books that we love so much.
Like
so,
we want to like be able to speak to that, because if we're pissed about it, it's okay. If we don't like it, it's okay. And if we're upset, it's okay. And if we love it, that's awesome. And that's great. And that, but we need to be able to have all of that and feel all of that. And we need that to be real and genuine and not feel like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, if we hate it, maybe we hate it enough that we can shit talk it like the
Mayfairs. Also the Mayfairs. I swear to God, if I start hating this, I'm going to be so sad, though. It's so good.
It will. I just can't imagine this show going.
They would
direction.
Have to really fuck it up. They'd really have to fuck it up. Yeah.
Well, and it goes back to what we talked earlier. It's like the faith that we have in Rollin, the faith that we have in this, and not just Rollin, but the rest of his creative team, these actors too. These actors are committed to the story in a way that...
Oh my God,
I mean,
it's beautiful.
Okay, we referenced The Witcher earlier. Like, Henry Cavill walked away from The Witcher largely because he didn't like the stories they were telling. He liked the original enough that he's like, this ain't it, and I'll go do something else, actually.
Right.
So I feel like
And he's Sam a big old nerd almost... that builds his own computers.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's literally working with Amazon now to make a Warhammer show.
Right.
Like, so, like, that like, is a nerd's nerd,
this is
right?
a big-ass nerd, like, and that's, yeah.
Sam is literally that for the Anne Rice books. So, like...
He is, and he is the most precious fucking possible, like, mascot you could have for the immortal universe. I love him so much. He's
perfect.
And he is not my type. Like, that's not my guy. Like, I'm not... But I love him. He's precious. I can't help it. I just... he's every bit that you want Lestat to be. He's everything Lestat has to be loved and to be likable and to be what this character becomes for all of us. And that's what's so fucking fantastic about this portrayal is that it's finally like... It's finally right. It finally has breath and life and the thing it needs to be something more.
Oh, well, that's the perfect place to end right there. Days away now from season two.
You guys are so close.
Can't wait for it. It's here, though. And I'm specifically very excited about episode one because we are finally going to get this part of the story that's really never been adapted. It wasn't in the movie at all. This Eastern European stuff.
Yes.
And the end of, in this case, the end of World War II. But, you know, going through Europe before we get to Paris feels like from the previews that I've heard, we're going to get a full episode of that at least. And I think I just can't wait. I can't wait to see what Rylan and team do with this.
I can't either.
Can't wait to talk about it with you all and hear your speculation and discussion and adulation as we work through this awesome story.
Absolutely. The adulation, 100%. Please and thank you. Let's keep that going because this is, it's so much fun. It's so much fun to enjoy it. I'm so glad that the quality's been so good and that we've really all been able to. I know that there are people that don't love it. And I get that. I totally get that and respect. And you know that, like, I listen to your points and all of that. But man, for those of us that are really enjoying it, this is a really good time.
One more thing before, just a programming note. If you are not on the newsletter that Christopher Rice set up for the celebration of life for Anne Rice, he came out the other day and made a post through that email newsletter, and then he also posted on Anne's socials. I think an announcement for that is fairly imminent, which means that we're probably just about a year away from the event itself. So my guess is the event's going to be in summer, early summer, very late spring of 2025. So,
I mean, if it's going to be in New Orleans. Excuse me.
Yeah, that would be 2025.
If it's going to be in New Orleans, it can't be much later than late spring or early summer.
That's a good, if we're gonna be that's a good out point, of I guess.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. It depends on where he's going to put us. The interest in this celebration of life was bigger than they anticipated. And so one of the things that's taken so long, he said, was securing some venue space that would be large enough for literally everybody that wants to come and be a part of it to do so. It is absolutely something that I know, Ashley, you are intending to try to make it happen too. So we will be there if we can at all, and we'll have a full year knowledge of the event. So we'll probably... a lot of us hopefully will be able to make it. And several of us that meet up down there, we'll do a thing, right?
That would
we'll
be so awesome. Oh my God. I would love that.
Yeah, we'll do something live together.
God,
we'll
go Joel, play trivia or something, depending upon how many of us there. We haven't seen each other in ages. It's been
a long, long time. Yeah.
Forever since we've actually seen each other's faces. So hell yeah. So, let's do it.
See, even once we get through season two, other than Mayfair, we do have things to look forward to, folks.
We do.
So stay tuned.
We do. There's books I haven't even read yet, y'all.
Well, and so that I'm excited to get there too. As we get in this next stretch of books, is the one where I've basically only read them one time.
Right.
So
I'm excited
to go back and revisit them.
Merrick and I know Blackwood Farm and Vittorio. I realized that I read that after we had talked about me probably not having read it.
Oh, nice. Yeah, but it's a small book, like Pandora. It's a short novel. He's not connected to any of the other stories. It's easy to forget him. But we're going to revisit that one in the off season as well. All right. You need to go and do your homework between here and the next episode. Go and watch season 2, episode 1 of Interview with a Vampire on AMC and AMC Plus.
It'll be there.
And come right back here. We'll talk about it. Until then, we have been your hosts. I'm Joel.
I'm Ashley.
And we are the Articulate Coven.
Thanks for listening to The Articulate Coven. You can join our community on Facebook by following the links in the show notes or searching for Articulate Coven on Facebook. You can subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at articulatecoven.com. And share us with your Anne Rice-loving friends.